Hi, everyone. It's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, I'm in New York City visiting Glitch HQ with Anil Dash and Alison Esposito. This is actually my first time meeting Anil. I feel like we've known each other for a while through Twitter. Anil is the CEO of Glitch, a friendly community where creators collaborate and build apps, bots, and art on the internet. It's super cool. You've probably seen some of the projects on Product Hunt, actually. They have a really neat community, awesome platform to encourage creation and makers, something that we really appreciate. Anil is also an advisor to a number of companies, including Medium, Donors Choose, Project Include, and is on the board of Stack Overflow. He's also a prolific writer, often advocating for a more inclusive and ethical tech industry. Our other guest, Alison, I first met when she was at Oyster, the Netflix for books, which was acquired by Google back in 2015. Afterwards, she set out to found Tech Ladies, a community that connects women with the best opportunities in tech. If you're a member of Tech Ladies, you may have actually seen some Product Hunt job listings. That's right, we are hiring, check them out. And on this show, we talk a lot about community, a topic that few people understand as well as Anil and Alison. We also discuss the ethics of building engaging products and the dark side of the internet. But before we jump in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. We're happy to have Intercom, a tool we've used since the beginning of Product Hunt, sponsor the show. Intercom has evolved quite a bit since we started using it in 2014. Many people are familiar with Intercom's customer support tooling, but really it's so much more. They recently introduced an app store, featuring hundreds of integrations with other services including Slack, Zoom, MailChimp, Stripe, and others. There's even a Product Hunt app available as well. One of our favorite integrations comes from Typeform, which allows you to present a fully interactive survey to your users directly on site. And with Intercom targeting, you can even choose who to gather feedback from, based on their location, activity, company attributes, and more. Visit intercom.com to give it a try. We'd like to thank Airtable for making the show possible. I've been talking with a diverse mix of companies that use Airtable to build their business, including Ryan Delk, COO at Omni.
Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Ryan.
Tell me more about Omni. What's Omni and what do you do?
We're building the future of how people will own and access things.
I know you're an Airtable user. Can you talk about how you use Airtable at Omni?
Yeah. The better question is, how don't we use Airtable at Omni? Basically, every single team at Omni is using it every day in some capacity. We use it on everything from the product and growth team to manage feedback from users, to do surveys, to gather data, all the way to on the ops side to manage how people are performing. We have an API that takes all the compliments that people get about their performance as a concierge, pipes those into Airtable, allows us to do analysis, and then automatically actually built a system that kind of displays those and emails those to the concierge just so they can know when they're getting positive feedback.
You can get $50 in free credit by visiting airtable.com/producthunt. Hey everybody, this is Ryan Hoover. I'm with Alison Esposito and Anil Dash here in New York. How's it going, everybody?
It's good.
Cool. So I'm actually traveling here to New York and then going to Canada for a conference. And it's been a couple years since I've been here. First, I haven't seen you, Alison, in a couple years.
Yeah. I think we probably about 2 years since I was last in San Francisco or something.
Yeah. It's been a while. Tell us about Tech Ladies a little bit. Give me the update.
Tech Ladies is a community for women in tech. We've grown to about 30,000 members and we have an online community. We have a really active job board. We have meetups all across the US and Canada. So there's just a lot of ways to get involved.
Cool. And Neil, what are you up to nowadays?
I am running Fog Creek software that has created Glitch. A lot of people know Fog Creek because in the past we invented Trello and co-created Stack Overflow and stuff like that.
Trello is something we use. It's such a simple product.
We use it too.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm a fan.
And then they sold to Atlassian last year. And then we have focused our company on building Glitch, which is a set of creative tools for anybody that wants to build apps and share them. And it has been taking off. So that's been a lot of fun.
Cool. So there's a sort of an underlying theme with this. When I reached out to Neil, I was like, hey, do you want to first get on a podcast and talk about things and who would be a good fit? And I was like, Alison would be great because she's also someone who's been building community for years. So, you know, we're just going to talk. We're going to talk about communities, products. And right before we started recording this, we started talking a lot about social media and kind of the responsibility of those that are building communities. You know, we can go a lot of different directions here, but one thing, well, Anil, you have a lot of thoughts. You've shared a lot of thoughts on the internet around communities, responsibility. Yeah, how do you manage Twitter first off? Because you get a lot of supporters and a lot of not supporters.
Right. Let's just say. Yeah, I have opinions and people have feelings about them. Well, Twitter is a particularly interesting example. I mean, I think, you know, my background is I've been in social media on the web for basically as long as it's existed. And I used to help run LiveJournal, which was one of the first large scale social networks, and actually was a big influence on Twitter. If you go back, you can find it online. It's probably still on Flickr somewhere. Jack Dorsey had shared a drawing of his original conception of what would become Twitter back when I think he was still in St. Louis, and he'd called it status.net. And the idea was inspired by LiveJournal, but it would work over text messaging on your phone. And that stuck with me in that there is a history to social networks. There are now decades of practice and experience about what works and what doesn't and what you have to anticipate. And that it changed when they got to, like, LiveJournal was probably the first social network to get to 1 million or 10 million users.
What year was this?
Brad Fitzpatrick was the founder of LiveJournal. He created it in 1999. The company I was working with in 2004 called Six Apart acquired the company in 2004, 2005, around that time frame. And, you know, for context, the dominant players at the time were Friendster, and MySpace started right around that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like some of it is like that sort of wacky, like, oh, like old days of the internet. Like, you know, that's the fun thing about being an old dude. But
did you use AIM, by the way?
Oh, AOL, did I? Messenger? Oh, my gosh. Did you,
Allison? Yeah. And I mean, I just have memories like LiveJournal, MySpace, Friendster. There was this weird website called Makeout Club that was for emo people.
Yeah, it wasn't what it sounds like, but it was cool.
Okay. Yeah, and like I was on all that stuff. Yeah. Like, really,
and people were on Neopets, or they were on, like, there were so many different places that you could go and create and express yourself. I mean, I think, you know, we talk about these a lot on the Glitch team, because like we have people on the team who are like, I've never heard of any of that stuff. Like, I was 4 years old. Like, I don't know what that is. And you know, you tell people. Millions of people used to make the internet. They used to build their own web page. They used to, like, you know,
learn GeoCities.
Like HTML, yeah. CSS. And, totally. And for those that know the history of MySpace, one of MySpace's, I don't know if you'd call it innovations, but also failures, is the ability to hack and kind of customize it. It made it really, well, a technical mess. But
it was wide open.
But it was wide open. And people could express themselves in interesting ways.
And that's a really interesting lesson, right? Because what I find, like, some of the young folks I mentor, you know, are like, the web as they've known it has always been Facebook. And so the idea, like, they're like,
by the way, if you don't mind me interjecting, it's kind of similar to how AOL was perceived by, you know, older generations at the time when it was the homepage of the walled garden,
closed, locked down. Yep. But even there was like a sort of wild west on AOL where, like, if you want to make a fan page for your favorite band or whatever, you would, and it would just be whatever you made. And now they're like, oh, well, if I'm a fan of a band, I can start a fan account on Instagram or on Twitter or on Facebook. And it's going to look like it has a background banner at the top, and I put in these hashtags and I do X, Y. It's this very templated thing, but there's no idea of, like, I'm going to do something totally different, you know? And I think that is there's a loss there. And I think it's sort of teaching people, like, the internet is something you make, the web is something you make, is this fundamental that's lost. And because of that, you have the problems you have in community where, like, all they know of a social network is, oh, it's got to have 1 billion people. Right. And I think I find joy and discovery when I go on Product Hunt. It's like, these are cool things and I wouldn't have seen them. And the people are not going to be jerks on this site. And it's because you're not, like, you don't have 1 billion people there. You're not saying we're going to be all things to all people.
Well, and, yeah, it's a good point, because I was just thinking when you were talking about MySpace, about how I was like the computer nerd out of my friends who figured out how to make MySpace like all blinged out. It had like glitter. Like, yeah. They were really
blingy.
Like, yeah.
I was a big blingy.
Is that what it was? Blingy?
Yeah, blingy was an app that you would upload an image to and then you could click on the part that you want to make it sparkly. And I was like, make it all sparkly.
So mine was all sparkly and it was really fun. But I was thinking now, like, that if you could do that with Facebook, which you can, but if you could do that with your Facebook profiles, it would probably be like kind of uncool to do it, but it was sort of considered cool around my friends, because they were like, oh, how did you do that? And I was like, oh, I learned how to write code.
There's prestige code, to, like, knowledge and knowing CSS and JavaScript and these things.
I don't know if that's the case anymore.
Right. And it was also like, you weren't like, let's learn to code now.
Right.
It
I just like, wanted I it to look a certain way.
I love this band or I love this singer.
Yeah.
And like, the way you express that happened to incidentally be code. And that's, to me, that's still what the internet is. That's what the web is supposed to be. And I...
It's just too big. That's what we were kind of saying, like, right? Like, well, you know, if there's so many people, then...
Yeah. There's the scale.
The scale and I think it's becomes also, a problem.
Oh, but if they do that, they could hide our ads. If they do mm-hmm. that, our data that we're gathering on them isn't going to be reliable, right? Like, there's a lot of, like, business model stuff. Yeah. There's, like, the funders of it didn't want that. It wasn't that people didn't want that. Nobody was like, I want MySpace to go away. They were like, you know, it'd be nice if it was smoother and more reliable and worked. Like Friendster died because like the performance was terrible and it was just too slow and whatever. But nobody was like, I don't want to be able to express myself in these ways. They don't know what they miss.
Yeah. And I think going back to your point about the expression through code, it's something that I think a lot about too, especially we were just talking too. I learned today that Allison used to be in a band and playing music and learning the guitar, the drums, or to sing is a very similar type of vehicle for expression as it is to code or to design or to do anything in technology.
Yeah.
And certainly this, I'm not trying to plug, but I am plugging Glitch to some extent because Glitch is essentially a platform that enables and makes it easier and more fun to express yourself through code and through products, essentially.
Well, we are real explicit when we're building Glitch that I look at SoundCloud as an analog. I look at YouTube and I use GitHub every day and I'm glad for them. Like, you know, the Microsoft deal is great and like I'm happy they're doing well. But like, even though we host Git repositories and we host code and all those things, like Glitch is about being a creative. And I want... And like even in language, so like for people who don't know, so Glitch is like it lets you edit code, it automatically deploys your app or your project to the web, and then other people can, you know, use it, or they can do what we call remixing it, which is like it clones it, you know, and the technical process, and you know, is the we are configuring a new container, setting up a node stack, cloning your Git repository, getting the app running, and that all happens in 3/4 of a second, and that's great. But like the experience is you click remix and now you have your own copy.
Yeah, go back to the music metaphor comparison.
Exactly.
Literally remixing code.
Right, exactly. So why didn't we call it like cloning a repository? Why did we call it remix? It's like, what is the thing emotionally, expressively you're trying to do? And I think that's in everything, the tools that I love to use. And, you know, even like YouTube, like there's a lot of problems, like YouTube comments are horrible and whatever, but like you can find amazing content and stories there, and it can be, you know, somebody who's like, I'm going to do this professionally produced video about this thing that's really important to me and I'm going to put it out there. Or the person is like, I'm going to throw together a makeup tutorial just because I figured something out and I want to share it. And like, those are both there. Well, there was the sort of classic like dismissal of like when Dropbox launched and there was a comment, I think it was on Hacker News.
Hacker News, yeah. Right? A famous. Yeah. Well, it seems like this story is
geek famous.
Yeah, geek famous.
You know, they're like, oh, well, you could do this with rsync, right? And then you can sort of imagine that like when somebody's like YouTube launches, like, well, you could do that with Dropbox. You know, it's like, well, it turns out like the hosting of the video wasn't the thing. Like community is this thing and it has a value. And whether you create an environment that people feel like they can express themselves in is a rare and special and delicate thing. And, you know, I think of like Allison, like I got to go to a Tech Ladies event recently and, you know, seeing people in that room. You know, like all these women were like, this is a place I can talk about this thing that matters to me. You had a convening power. And like the room didn't cause that, right? Like it wasn't the physical structure didn't cause that. It's that you set like the tone and the environment and the context where people are like, I can talk about this thing or express this thing that matters to me. That's such a rare and
I was kind of thinking of that. We were talking about this before we started recording, but basically about how like because part of Tech Ladies started as a community of meetups and then grew into an online community and now we're growing it into our product, it sort of felt like it just happened. Like it just happened, you know? And so part of me still every day has this mix of like, well, it just happened. It was just this community that grew. And that's the part that shows that it was needed and some of it grows on its own. But I've had to learn to be like, you know what? It didn't just grow on its own. Like we also created structure around it and we have 6 people working on it now and it's a thing, right? But so there's something about community that I think if you're doing it right, it should feel like a mix of it just happened and it's natural and also but we're honing that and working on that.
Yeah, it's kind of this weird balance where the community itself is in some way self-organizing or maturing on its own. At the same time, you have to be careful and put up girders and make in the case of a product design, you have to be very thoughtful in how the language you use. Back to your point about you didn't call it cloning, you called it remixing. And some of the, even the language, I think, within community products can inform the tone and sort of the vibe of the entire thing. How do the tech ladies today interact online, and how did you think about what tools to use there? Because there are a lot of people I know who are eager to build communities online, but they're asking what tools should I use? Should I build it from scratch? Should I use a Facebook group?
It's a really like age old debate, and I don't know that we have the right answer for sure. But what we did was, when we started meeting in New York, and then that grew to like a couple hundred, and then later grew to a couple thousand, and then people started moving, and we wanted to keep everybody, you know, connected to Tech Ladies, we first started a newsletter, which we still do. We send a newsletter twice a week with like jobs and events and stuff. But the chatter and the ability to talk and post, we started a Facebook group, and we've stuck with that. A lot of people ask for Slack and want a Slack, and it's a whole other thing. And we'll figure out how to scale in time, like whether that makes sense for us at a certain point. But we've kept with the Facebook group because there's something about the posts and the threading that happens in the group that's worked really well for us and our ability to manage it as a small team. Now that group has like almost 30,000 members, so that obviously becomes harder to manage too, but it's still easier than a Slack would be with 30,000 people chatting.
This is a really interesting thing is Slack is terrible for communities, right? Slack is a great product. Our company relies on it. They are amazing as a business. Like, it's really impressive. And they're terrible for communities. And it's because they're not designed for that. And there's this very sort of tech mindset thinking of like, a box that I type in and somebody can message me back in is a messaging app, and all messaging apps do the same thing. And it's like, they can have very similar shapes and be completely different in purpose. And you look at Discord or Gitter, these other tools, and they look superficially like Slack, and their data models are probably fairly similar, but a lot of small design choices percolate up and they have very different implications. And so a Discord could work really well. I mean, well, there's other community issues that would probably not make it appropriate for tech ladies, but like infrastructurally, it could work well. And Slack doesn't, because it's well designed for its use case, for a team, and a team and a community are different things.
And the other thing is that when it's more of like chatter, like on Slack, what's going to happen is that the people with the most time on their hands are going to use it. And we really wanted to encourage like mentorship and people being able to meet. Like, Tech Ladies is not just engineers, it's engineers, product designers, everything. No matter what you do in tech, you're welcome. And so, we didn't want it to just be a bunch of, you know, junior people just chatting because they have time right now, or whatever, yeah, or they're in college or whatever it is, or they're more of a need. They have more of a need, so they come to the community. We really want there to be like senior people in the mix so that people can meet different types of people. And so Facebook has actually worked well for that. Mm-hmm. The other reason we did it was just because more people are on Facebook, and starting something new would be really challenging. And having worked at a ton of startups, mm-hmm, we're like, party's over here, guys. Come on over here.
We made this
here.
Really cool thing. You should come
right.
back.
You should come check on. It exactly. out. Like, we just knew that would be a challenge.
Nobody
and we
wants
have,
to be the first at the party.
Yeah, and we have way too many other things we're focused on, like our job board and stuff. So we were like, okay, we're not going to build a product for that from scratch yet. Maybe someday, maybe it'll work out. But right now, it's been doing well on Facebook. So
I think because of ego, so many communities, first thing they think is, let's build a tool.
It has to have
right?
our name
and on it. And you know, again, like being old school, I look at like, you know, Craigslist was literally an email mailing list for years before it became a website. And it's still this like dominant player. It's like one of the last of the independent major sites, you know. And I think about this a lot with us being independent, where it's like, can you still be this entity? It's like, well, how did they persist and how did they have people really be connected to this thing for so long? And it's like, I think it's no accident they start with community first without the ego of like, we have to build the platform ourselves. We have to build the tool ourselves. But there is an aspect too of like, you know, both of you said it just happens, right? Like, the community just happens. And I think this is particularly, I think this is often gendered, like the dismissal of the emotional labor of what it takes to create a community is like, oh, shucks, it just happened, is erasing like, there were a lot of thoughtful choices. Now, I think for both of you, because like I like respect both your communities, it may be intuitive, like you just have a strong sense of this is what we have to do to welcome people in, but that's still hard work.
Yeah.
And also many are not fluent in it, as we say with all the rest of the internet that makes us miserable, you know? and I think that's something too, where like to be mindful or thoughtful or expressive about something that is intuitive to you is hard. But I disagree, it just happens. I think you're wrong.
And I wouldn't say it just happens. I guess to rephrase maybe my perception of it, it's more that the people in the foundation that you set largely pull you in a certain direction. And that is largely what influences, I think, the growth and the
trajectory. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, yeah. And I don't mean to harp on it that much, but I just see.
No, you're right. It's important to see what part of it comes from you and to give yourself or your community credit for that as well. But yeah, I definitely think it's also dangerous to say it just happens, because what happens when you do that is a lot of like corporate places will just be like, throw up a community and let it stick and see. And then they're wondering like, well, why doesn't this work? And
or leave it alone and you know, that Lord of the Flies thing takes over.
Yeah.
And right. Like, because the thing that's like, well, most companies, they throw up a community and it's ghost town and nobody goes. The worst case is they throw up a community and there's nothing managing or moderating it, and it does grow.
In the wrong direction.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that is like a nightmare.
This podcast is brought to you by Stripe. The best way to know if people like your product is if they'll actually pay for it. But collecting payments on the internet is harder than you might think. Stripe makes it easy for entrepreneurs to turn their ideas into businesses by helping them accept money from anyone, anywhere in the world. So if you're building an internet company and you care about revenue, you should check out Stripe.com. To switch gears a little bit, I'm curious to know, we talked a little bit about Slack and other products that you use and love. What are some products, it could be things you use in your company or maybe things on your home screen. What apps, products, things do you love? So what should people know about? What should people download, buy, use?
Looking at our phones now, but I have this new app called Allo, and it's really cool. It's made by a fellow tech lady. They call it Allo Bud if you're looking in the app store for it.
I saw this.
Do you know this? It was on Product Hunt.
Yeah.
And so basically it's sort of like a self-care app, but also like a mental health care app. You know, this whole like self-care thing is getting a little out of control. It's like, it's not just about, it'll actually tell you like, did you drink any water today? Mm-hmm. Like, did you take a break? You know, just really simple things that like, we all don't realize that we're missing out on. And so you can create like a little garden by checking in with it all day. And the design is really cute. It kind of reminds me of like old internet in that way. Yeah, it's very like pixelated. And
there are a lot of apps in this app category right now. I feel like I'm always getting emails or seeing on Product Hunt, like people that are like, you know, this will remind you to do some deep breathing. And which I think is great, but I think because that's a sort of broader trend, there's something interesting there about what it says about like where we're at emotionally and culturally and all that stuff.
It's like, too. We can't get off our phones. So we just need to like have something telling us to take care of ourselves because we're so addicted to them.
Well, I mean, I see this on, you know, Glitch is, you know, among other things, is a tool for creating apps, right? And so like we see these trends and this data of like, what are people building? And there's, I'm going to forget the name of it. It'll come back to me in a minute. But there was an app on the homepage about like, how is your team doing? And everybody checks in with like their, like how
emotionally.
Yeah, exactly. Emotion. Like how are they doing with like their comfort level and their, how calm they are and like how tense they are and stressed. And like, it was like, wow. And then I was like, okay, that's fine. That's an app. And then somebody else did like a pixel calendar. And I think it's literally called Pixel Calendar. And you like each day you pick a color of a pixel of like how your day went. And then over the course of a year, you have this like really pretty visualization of all the different colors. And there were like three or four more of these. They were all like wellness for yourself, for your team and how you're feeling and like tracking your moods and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, none of these are startups. These are all like people in their free time building apps. And like everybody is trending towards like building tools and technology that is like, is this making me happy? And it's such a wild thing because my last real startup I did with Gina Trapani was ThinkUp, and it was social media analytics. And it was literally about like, is this making you happy? Is the time well spent? And, you know, of course, that's a hard business to build if Twitter and Facebook don't want to let you build it. But the idea, it just still keeps coming back to me. All we keep doing is like, I want this thing to tell me I'm okay. Yeah, I want this thing to help me be okay.
The pendulum is kind of swung back in the past 6 months, even, it seems, in regards to the past 5+ years, I would say, with social media and product design has been a lot about, you know, growth hacking. And I don't mean that in a negative sense necessarily, but more just that the goal is to optimize and improve numbers, and with disregard to maybe how it's making people feel. And WWDC just happened, and Apple announced a lot of, you know, product decisions and changes to iOS to actually help people stay off their phones, which is kind of ironic.
Right. And Google I/O had those too, like how much time am I spending on my phone? And these things go in trends, right? And like last year was the like a little bit of like data privacy stuff was the like, how are we going to be better on this? And they're always reacting to the moment, but everybody's doing like, am I spending too much time on my phone? And it's wild for me. I guess we started that company like 5 years ago, and we're like, we're going to tell people how much time they're spending on Twitter. And like the VCs we talked to were like, are you out of your mind? Like, you know, they're like, this is, well, nobody wants to see that. And I was like, you know, well, the timing is everything. So I guess we got our timing exactly wrong. But the idea is, I think it just keeps coming back. It's like, people are mindful and people do care and they are thoughtful, and you have to enable them to be that. And even in technology.
What does social media or communities in 10 years look like? I know this is maybe a really unfair or broad question, but we're seeing, you know, if you look back in the past 20 years and talking about the early days of, you know, expression online and how that's changed, fast forwarding another 10 or 20 years, what does that look like, do you think?
I think there's going to be, well, from what I've noticed with tech ladies is like something really interesting is that we get a lot of email requests from people to move it off of Facebook because they disagree with a lot mm-hmm. that Facebook is doing. Totally reasonable.
Yeah.
But we've built so much there, like we're not ready to move it off, you know, all that kind of thing. But the other thing is that we're telling people like, you know, if you're overwhelmed by your newsfeed, you can just bookmark the group, you can go to the book, like just go straight to the group. The other thing that's interesting about that is as this is happening, Facebook is also realizing that groups are really important and they're putting a lot into the products for groups. So it's gotten a lot better. It's another thing that, you know, pulls you back into staying. But we've definitely like lost some people who don't want to be on Facebook. That being said, there are people who are like, this is the only thing I come to Facebook for anymore, or I bookmark it and go straight to it because it's the only like space that feels safe. And we're just one group. And so I think that in 5 or 10 years, like as the internet still feels more like wild, wild west in terms of like these, you know, horrible things that you can see and horrible people you can interact with and all of that, I think people are going to start to just find their people and find their groups and like learn that that's the safest, most sensical way for them to spend their time online.
I think that's really right. And I think that I always have these theories that tech is a fashion industry. Right? It goes in cycles, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like instead of, you know, hemlines go up, hemlines go down, we have like centralized to decentralized, or we have, you know, this programming language is uncool and now it's cool. And mm-hmm. and if I go back 10 years ago, a little more than that, the company is that we'd built a lot of social networking tools, and we built one called Vox. This is before Vox Media. And it was, you know, small communities with like really good privacy controls for you to talk about what you want to talk about. And there were a lot of sort of tools like the LiveJournal and the network I mentioned before. They had communities, and it would be like just a group of people of common interests. And there's a straight line from communities to Facebook groups, which groups are the last good thing on Facebook, really.
Mm-hmm. I think you know, too.
and I mean, they know it too. I mean, I had a Facebook hosted a dinner at this event that I was at last night, and I think it was off the record, but like broadly, they're like, how do we stop having people hate us? You know, I don't think that's a big secret. And, you know, and everybody there was like, you know, here's a laundry list of things. But everybody also said, yeah, but groups are okay. You know, and there's a broader lesson here, separate from Facebook or anybody else, which is communities have a natural size and a healthy size. And it's about scope and having a human scale, right? Because if you're all in a room together, people very seldom shout like hateful slurs at each other. It's really rare. Like
especially if it's among your peers or...
Right. Or you have some connection or a friend of a friend or whatever it is. Any common context, it's exceedingly rare unless somebody's really disturbed, right? But it's routine on multi-million or 100-million scale networks. It happens to me literally every day, and I'm not like a celebrity, right? So that's a design issue about community. And it is possible to design very, very large networks where that doesn't happen. So I look at like Stack Overflow was spun out of Fall Creek. We co-created it and I'm on the board. And it's got issues. Like it is not welcoming enough. And there are definitely like issues at play for underrepresented people feeling welcomed. But it is a top 40 website in the world. It's bigger than Apple.com in traffic. It's huge. And there are no roving bands of Nazis on the site. There is no misinformation on the site. There is like these fundamental things that we worry about in very large scale networks. And it's like, well, even with, you know, the caveat of the things that are wrong there, how did they get the stuff right? And it's like, they were worried about it and they thought about it and they talked about it and they tried to solve for these problems. And that doesn't mean they didn't also make mistakes. Like you still are going to at scale have these errors, but like it is possible to build those things at very large scale and not have those issues. But only if you're anticipating them and being mindful. And still, even there, there are lots of little sub communities, right? And none of them have those issues, but they're like different topics that are there. And I contrast to like, I think Reddit is a great site and there's a lot of value there, but there are subreddits that, well, I mean, you know, I've had subreddits where like literally one of the topics they organized around was how much they hate me.
You specifically.
Yeah. Like I was one of the targets they identified, which is like, you know, maybe I'm biased, but I think that's a bad thing for a subreddit to be about, you know? And when you see that, you're like, where are the boundaries? What is this place for? And the easiest way to solve for that is keep it at human scale. And the tension there, honestly, is the business model of most of tech. People are trying to get to hypergrowth and hyperscale. And I see that, you know, sitting in the seat I'm in, we're a 18-year-old company and we've always been independent. And we're able to build really large things. I mean, Trello has, I don't know, tens of millions of users, hundreds of millions of users.
Well, there's two reasons for that. Like it's one that you have people who care and are willing to enforce it and all of that kind of stuff that we were saying, but also playing the long game in a sense.
Yes.
Like understanding that you may lose those people. Like where you ban people, therefore you lost a user. You know, right. Oh my God, if you're obsessed with growth, you're going to be, you know, but you can't think like that. You have to have an abundance mindset.
Right.
And you also have to say like, you know, we're not for everybody and it's okay to not be for everybody.
Well, and it's even the standards you set, right? Like people act differently in different contexts. And you see this, I mean, I think this also is a thing that is like, you know, particularly of men of like, I think of like when I was a teenager and if I were around one group of friends, would I act like a jackass? And if I were around another, would I act differently? Like I was very, like I always think of myself as very independent or smart or whatever, but I was very impressionable. And how obnoxious I was willing to be to others was a direct, you know, factor of who was around me and how they were acting, right? And that is true online too.
This actually goes back to what you're doing at Tech Ladies too. You're creating an environment where the context and the people that you're surrounding yourself with have some common experience and mission or goal. I like to use the kind of comparison of a house party or an event in general. If you go to a gala and you're wearing a suit and you're among a bunch of like fancy people, you might probably act differently than if you're at a frat party, you know, hanging out with people.
Yeah.
Not that you're going to do anything wrong necessarily at a frat party. It's just that you're going to be more playful. You're going to joke around. You might say things that...
The dancing is different.
Dancing might be different. Yeah. Music, probably different.
Real glass instead of a red solo cup.
Yeah, probably. Although red solo cups at a gala would be kind of nice.
That'd be like very product on theme. Right?
Yeah. But when you create an online community, you still have the same components. You go to the website, you open up the app, and you're basically walking into an event. And the design and the language and the people and the way they talk to each other, it's all the same type of thing. People start to adapt to this community and these people. Because as humans, we don't want to be the weirdo. I mean, in rare cases, there are some people who do want to be the weirdo. But you don't want to be the weirdo kind of going out of turn or not adapting or conforming in some way if you want to optionally be a part of this community. And so I think that going back to what we talked about before, it's the subtleties of product design, I think, that matter a lot when building communities.
Yeah, and the uncool on paper aspect of having admins. Like I think people think it's uncool to have admins because it's a human that has to do that work and that's not considered cool in tech, you know, like we can't automate it, you know? Yeah. So therefore it's not cool.
Well, and who are the people that do that work too?
Yeah, there's a lot of, we're kind of going down the rabbit hole for those that want to build communities. Maybe this is a good episode to listen to. It requires a lot of empathy to actually be a community builder and patience because in many ways, it is a customer support role when you are working with a community. And we've seen this at Product Hunt where, you know, there's frustrations, there's misunderstandings. Sometimes they are in the wrong, but you have to manage that kind of situation. So we've handled a lot of those types of things. And how have you seen Glitch grow over the past, how long has it been, 2 years?
We started working on the product about 2 years ago. We came out of beta about 2 months ago. And it's been a wild ride. I mean, I think there's a couple of parts that are related. I think one is, to the gala example, if a couple guys start throwing punches at the gala and everybody's like, you know, somebody steps in and is like, that's unacceptable. You're kicked out. Everybody's like, okay, well, that was weird, but okay. And if somebody says, keep going, fellas, no problem. Everybody else will leave, right? Mm-hmm. Like everybody else will be like, wow, what is this? That is not what I expected. And that scenario of like, we have a couple of bad actors in a space that is ostensibly neutral and tolerating them will set a tone for everybody else that'll chase out the good actors is on large scale social platforms typically called free speech. right? So like, we're letting these guys be horribly obnoxious because of free speech. And it's like, well, what about the free speech if everybody doesn't want to be around people that are horrible, right? You know, and similarly, like, most of the people that are bad actors online are not bad actors in their real life. They're not like kicking their dog when they come home. They're just like, this doesn't count. It's not a real thing. And so I can be a jerk here because everybody else is being a jerk here. And they don't perceive that there's a cost. And if you can nudge them, and I think TechLage is a great example of this, like, I'm sure there are women in the community who, like, if given a negative incentive, would be toxic or would be negative.
Yeah, but, and like, it's, and we have it. Like, right. It happens.
But
and
you have an environment where that's like, that's not accepted.
Yeah, and we even have, like, since we're still kind of like a small team, but we've grown really fast, I mean, we have to also rely on community members to flag people to us. Mm-hmm. So we'll say, like, you know, just let us know. And
But they know you'll act if they do.
They know that we'll act. And the other thing is, like,
Allison's
having...
Allison's watching.
Like, I don't see all my notifications anymore. Sorry. You know, sometimes people get upset and I'm like, oh, you don't understand. I don't see all the notifications anymore. So yeah, I think, like, just also coming out and, like, just speaking as a leader, you know, like, sometimes something will happen and we'll be like, by the way, like, we noticed some ageism in the group, and I came out and wrote a whole thing about ageism, and, like, here's why it's not cool.
Authority because of what your role is.
Yeah, and just, like, saying, like, you know, you might not even realize you're doing it, but when you say, like, oh, I experience ageism too in tech because I look so young, and it's like, no, it's really grading on the people who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s and, like, can't even get in the door anymore.
It's like in a job interview when somebody says, like, what's your biggest weakness? It's like, I just work too hard.
I'm just too perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's something that, like, we have to, like, sometimes we'll come out and just say, like, oh, we've seen things repeated. We're going to write about this and put it out there. And, like, you know, it's kind of like the mom and dadding of the...
You gotta nip it in the bud. Yeah. That's what my mom would say sometimes. You gotta nip it in the bud.
But, you know, to that point about, like, you know, what I see with Glitch, like, we are starting to grow. So we you know, we came out of beta 2 months ago. We've had 1.5 million, 2 million devs try out the platform, you know, which is a lot for a young platform. And you know, with the GitHub news, a lot of people have come by to kick the tires and see if this is a tool they want to add to their toolkit. And you know, we're really, really vigilant about this. We're really lucky. Our community engineer who leads a lot of that effort is Jen Schiffer, who's very, very engaged with the community and very well known, and also very willing to have that positional authority and say, like, this is what we accept, what we don't accept. And obviously, I'm not a shrinking violet myself. And I think when people see that, but, you know, if you go to the homepage, it says, like, at the top of the page, this is a friendly community.
Mm-hmm.
And
you have these illustrations. I love the design, actually. I don't know who's responsible for that.
Our lead designer on it is Pirjan Keth, who's here in our office in New York. And we work with a number of illustrators out in the community. People contribute them. You know, it's very sort of contributory. And that design, you know, both us saying out loud, this is a friendly community, and the design sort of indicating that, you know, from a product standpoint, we think about those really deeply. I mean, they're very casual. Like, it's like there's a turtle and a skateboard on the homepage. Like, it's an enterprise.
So he says, right on. I saw that picture in one of your blog posts recently.
Yeah. I mean, that's it's funny because, like, it was like this incidental thing we did in an explainer graphic for a feature. And, like, everybody just loved this turtle on a skateboard. So now I'm just like, it shows up a lot more often.
Yeah.
But I think to that point, it's like having those playful elements is, like, it's very loose in design and very loose in voice, but very, very considered as a design choice and as a an intentionality about what the community is. And that's part of it is if we say at the top of the page it's a friendly community and you're not acting in a friendly way or the thing you create is not friendly, it's a very easy litmus test because everybody knows what it is. And you know, you get to the people that are like rules lawyering. It's like, technically, I'm being friendly. It's like, you know what? If you got to explain it, it probably wasn't that friendly.
Yeah, yeah. And, if you have to say you're not a racist, then...
Yeah, exactly. And so it sets this real... Exactly. So it sets this really clear, you know, boundary around expectations. And it turns out, like... And that's where you get to people's better angels. Because, like, all of us have bad days. All of us are jerks online sometimes. All of us are... And it's like, I don't actually, you know, we're a company, like, you know, Joel Spolsky, who's, like, the first CEO and the most, you know, our best-known co-founder of our company... You know, is this, you know, was probably one of the most first and most visible gay men, you know, to be a tech CEO. And if you say, like, our gay Jewish founder, do you think he's going to be welcoming to Nazis on our site? It's like, this is a pretty easy question to answer, right? So, like, that stuff is actually easy for us. Where you get into is somebody's having a bad day and not being their best selves and in a bad mood and might be short with somebody or might do something that's a little bit of a jerky move. And, like, I've been that guy, so I'm not, like, you know, pointing fingers at anybody. can you build a design that either communicates to them, you know what, you don't have to feel that way, this is a happy place, or if you are in that mode, this isn't the place to bring it, right? Because you can
go to Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, you know, like, yeah, take it wherever you need to get, like, you know, whatever, go to the gym, or like, you know, have some ice cream or whatever it is that makes you feel better. But I think there is that thing about communicating expectation, and people will meet you there. You know, we had somebody post a project, and it had a pretty offensive name. Like, the app was sort of a joke, but like, they were like, haha, I'm going to give it this like kind of offensive name. And a guy was doing we use Glitch a lot in education, and a lot of people use it to teach the kids how to code, which I love. And, you know, like, I searched for this like term, and I got this really offensive project name, and I was really shocked, and like, this is really terrible if I don't show my kid. The first thing was, that person emailed me directly.
The person that created that?
The person who found this offensive project. Yeah. Or he tweeted me directly. He DM'd me. And I was like, thank you for reaching out. Like, he reached out to the CEO of the company. And I was like, first of all, we've done something right. If that person knows that, one, knows to find us, two, has confidence that even raising this thing will like get
It'll
a response.
Go anywhere,
and not, you know, and not get mocked or whatever. And then, you know, I took it to the team, and they, of course, immediately like suspend the project. And I emailed the creator, and I said, this is what happened. This dad had this experience on Glitch. And the creator was like, you know what? I thought it was a funny joke, and it wasn't. And I'm really sorry, and tell them
wow.
I'm sorry.
Wow. That's, you know, like the best case scenario. Yeah. You could have everybody, you know, gets it on every end.
And that is what most people want to be. They really are. They don't want, like, that wasn't somebody saying, I want to offend this person's kid, right? Like, they don't have that intention. And all it is if you can build the environment to connect the dots where everybody knows there's a person on the other end, and they're real, and they have real feelings and valid concerns, and you can meet them. And we, as a platform, as a company, as a, you know, as an infrastructure for this, are accessible, approachable, and give a damn. There's no reason not to do that. And that's true with millions of users. That's true with, you know, like, our ambitions are huge. Like, I'm, you know, we've, like, the past successes of this company have had, like I said, millions of users and been enormously valuable. Like, I'm not going to make the smallest product that we ever make. So, like, we want to be big and, mm-hmm. and successful. But there's no reason it can't also be really mindful and thoughtful. And I also look at, like, you know, what both of you do as the inspirations. Like, there are so many examples of people making healthy communities and healthy products. And the exceptions we look at are these hyper growth, enormous billion scale networks where people were miserable. And it's like, why don't we model ourselves after the things that are human scale that make us happy?
Yeah.
One of the things that, like, we have in our code of conduct is trust intent, but name impact. Mm. So trust that, like, the other person has good intentions in what they were saying. Yeah. Read it the best way you could possibly read it, which is also, by the way, just a healthier way to go about living your own life.
Not assuming that they meant wrong.
Yeah.
Unless it's
obvious. Yeah.
Yes. Obvious. And then, you know, but naming the impact, meaning like, you know, when you said this, this is how I felt. It sounds really like therapy-y, but it's true.
I learned that
true.
In middle school. They had classes on that in that exact language.
Where did you go to junior high school?
Sounds like Eugene, Oregon.
Wow.
Yeah, because Roosevelt, very liberal kind of city. And we used that same language. And at the time, you know, I thought, this is really stupid. We're not going to talk like this. As I kind of become an adult and experience more things, I realize, actually, that language is very helpful. It doesn't make it into an argument or like a pointing a finger kind of.
In my junior high school, we got shoved into lockers. I don't know. That was
that was
different. Had a different experience. Of course, you're a lot taller than I am. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, a kid definitely went through the window at my middle school, but this is good. This is good to hear. I'm glad
Why did you do that? Why did you push him out there? Come on.
It wasn't me.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, this is that idea. If the surprise revelation was you were actually.
I pushed people through windows.
Allison is the worst.
And that's how
internet.
I built a good community.
Yeah.
Pushing people through windows.
Cool. Well, I think we'll end on that. But before we do, what do you want to plug? Anything with Glitch? Anything with Tech Ladies? Any events coming up?
Yeah. So, well, we're working on a new website. We hope to have that out in a few months. It will be our first like real product that we're putting out that isn't just something hacked together by me sitting on my couch. So we have like a real team working on this now. So that's exciting.
I think from our standpoint, we want to see people create things on Glitch. If you've had an idea kicking around in your head, it's probably the easiest way to get it out into the world. We love helping people submit their Glitch apps to Product Hunt.
We've seen a lot of really cool stuff.
We had a 14-year-old kid in India build this app that I think was like number 3 for the day on Product Hunt. And like he was over the moon and we were too, it was like... This is this thing that, and it's like, it doesn't sound like a startup. It's just like, these are tools that people want, or these little fun gadgets or whatever. And I think that's it. Like if you have this idea in your head that is like, you've been waiting to get out there and express it and share it with people, I don't want the tools and the technology and people being jerks to be the barriers. I want it to be like every spare minute you got, you've got some place to put that, that idea that you love, and you know, that's it.
Yeah. Just express yourself through tech. I think that's part of the reason why I am excited about Product Hunt is, you know, how do we give place, create a place on the internet for people to express themselves and show what they made. And I had this email from a founder who recently launched, and to paraphrase, his words were something along the lines of, you know, the launch, I'm so excited to share it. You know, the launch actually inspired me on Product Hunt to make more things and launch more things, which is exactly what we want. We don't think everything should be a startup. Like most things on Product Hunt are not companies. They're just projects. And that's okay. That's maybe a different podcast episode to rant on, but I think too many people place too much emphasis on and judgment on people building things for fun or for expression, when in reality, tech is just a vehicle for expression. And yes, a kid can be a company, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's just a 14-year-old kid hacking on code, learning. Anyway, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. This was a blast.
Thanks.
Now's the part of the show where we hear from you, the listeners. We asked the Product Hunt community, what's your favorite home screen app that few people know about? Here are a few of the responses.
Please leave a message after the tone.
I think my favorite home screen app that nobody knows about is called Hello Weather. I like it because it's super clean and simple, and also because it's really friendly. This is Justin Jackson from BC, Canada.
Hey, my name is Chris. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. My favorite app on my home screen is my LastPass app and my LastPass Authenticator app. It is extremely easy to use together. It helps manage all my passwords, and I manage passwords for multiple people in my business. And it's just extremely easy to use. It's attached to my SMS, and it's extremely helpful.
Hey Ryan, my name is Elena and I'm from the United States, and my favorite app on my home screen is Yapper. It gives all my favorite things I actually care about and would want to recommend to others, such as books I read, movies I watch, and places I visit, and much more in one place. It makes it super easy for anyone to find things I like, as well as helps me to tap into recommendations of other people I know and want to learn more from. Thanks, Ryan.
If you'd like to share your favorite apps on the show, give us a call at 707-785-6152. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week, but in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.